State and federal governments say they're moving quickly to tighten gun laws in the wake of the Bondi terrorist massacre.
What we have done is to task through National Cabinet Premier Minns and Premier Cook, who's the incoming chair of the Council of Australian Federation, to work on that.
Premier, how soon could New South Wales Parliament be recalled to legislate that?
I would say pre-Christmas. Logistically, we're working with our MPs to get back into Parliament as soon as possible.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and New South Wales Premier Chris Minns speaking there in Sydney yesterday. Federal police have urged governments to go further, including tracking ammunition. Officers have also spoken out overnight about chronic and worsening shortages of staff to monitor potential threats. Alex Caruana is the president of the Australian Federal Police Association.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
You wrote to the Finance and Public Service Minister, Katie Gallagher, over resourcing concerns. What did you tell her?
Look, the Finance Minister and the Minister of Public Service, Katie Gallagher, she put out a public service-wide announcement that there needs to be some efficiency dividends found from every department. And what we did is we wrote to her to let her know that the AFP is not a regular public service, and an efficiency dividend is effectively a cut to funding and resources for the AFP, and that would have dire consequences to investigations, and that includes counter-terrorism investigation.
The minister had said that that was a request to all government departments and agencies to look at possible areas of cuts, that it wouldn't necessarily lead to, you know, a bottom 5% be cutting. Do you think there's no room in the AFP to look at even administrative processes for areas where it might be able to find savings?
The AFP is really lean as it is right now. So we are already as short funded as we can be, and investigations have already been compromised because of the short funding that the government is spending on policing, on federal policing. So what more can we take off without compromising more of our mission and more of our duty of care to the community? And I think where the government, where Katie may have misspoken, is an efficiency dividend is a cut. And when the minister speaks, when your boss speaks to its subordinates, the subordinates act, and they always look at ways that they can make cuts, and that includes things like overtime or not putting resources on jobs where they probably should be.
You mentioned there that there have been implications for monitoring or investigations because of staffing levels. Can you give me any further understanding of that? Obviously, particular cases isn't something that we can go into, but can you explain that to me further, please?
Yeah, so as an example, where we've got teams where there used to be, you know, 21 or so people doing investigations and on things like child exploitation, human trafficking, counter-terrorism, those teams, those resources from those teams have been allocated elsewhere to other jobs. So now we don't have two teams of 21. Now we've got one team of about 8 trying to do the same amount of workload coming in to deal with those type of jobs. And that's not just in those type of examples that I gave you, but that's across the board, whether it's economic crime or other types of investigations. It's quite dire in some locations. And when we look at ACT policing, for instance, the number of overtime shifts that they can't cover every week, I see the lists that come through, and they can't even get enough people to make minimum numbers to cover the overtime shifts because we're overworked, we're stretched, and the employees and my members are starting to suffer from it.
Do you believe that more could have been done to monitor and control the two gunmen before their deadly rampage on Sunday, given that we know that ASIO had looked at only one of the individuals and hadn't found anything of ongoing concern way back in 2019? Even if the AFP had more resources, would that really have led to any different outcome from what we saw on Sunday?
Look, I think there's technology out there that we could invest in, or that the AFP and the government could have invested in to make monitoring easier. And obviously, resourcing would be a big step. Instead of having, and I don't know the exact numbers, but instead of having one person monitoring about 30 or 40 people, we could have easily had, you know, one person monitoring 10 people, and that might have been able to shine a light more easier. But The National Firearms Database that the AFPA has been calling for more than a decade now is one step, one example where if ASIO and some of our other intelligence organisations or national security organisations had real-time access to, when they're making the threat assessment on these people, I'm not sure what their threat level was, or I'm not sure if there was a threat level, but let's pretend that there was. If they had that information from the National Firearms Database that this person had access to firearms in some way, shape or form, they may have given that person a higher threat, and they may have acted differently. I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't have a time machine to go back in time and do it. But that's certainly some of the technology that's available that we could have used in that particular instance.
I should emphasise we are talking hypothetical arrangements here, not knowing all of the details of this case,
right.
But to get a sense of the structure of what we're talking about. Alex, when it comes to this National Firearms Register, you've also called for the regulation of ammunition. Could you explain for me what that would look like, how that might assist the efforts of police?
Yeah, so I think it should be really simple with today's technology. We've already got a national type of driver's license, and everybody's demerit points are recorded onto a system. So a similar system where at point of sale, somebody comes up with their license, they scan their license, and they scan the ammunition that they're purchasing, and that goes through the system. Now, for everyday run-of-the-mill recreational shooters, we're not trying to control in any way, shape, or form what they do. Anybody that's doing anything legal is not going to be controlled. It's not going to even be looked at. But where hypothetically there is an anomaly, someone's stockpiling ammunition, they purchase a whole shed load of ammunition, and there isn't a real reason. So, for instance, someone isn't liquidating some stock, and people are taking advantage of those cheap prices, or they're not an Olympic shooter, so they're not buying their year's worth of ammunition early, so they can shoot their 500,000 rounds a year. It was just where there's an anomaly. It allows intelligence agencies to look at it and go, "Hang on a minute, this is the information we've got. This person's got access to firearms, and 2 months ago they started buying, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, 50,000, 100,000 rounds of ammunition, and that gives the intel to those organisations to make a real risk assessment as to how they can keep the community safe. Do they need to act, or importantly for me, how do we keep our members safe so they're able to make a dynamic decision? pardon me, as they're entering that premises, if they're entering that premises, so that they're not going to get injured and they're not going to get shot, like we've seen very recently in recent times.
Alex Caruana, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Alex Caruana is the president of the Australian Federal Police Association.